Hey, everybody. J.D. Vance here, live from my office in the White House complex and filling in for some.
This here is insane. Also, there's a third thing I'm going to be pushing. None of this is normal, and all of us need to collectively realize how unbelievably insane the entire environment that we live in right now is, okay? This is the Vice President of the United States, the day after we've flown the flag at half-mast, and I think had, I don't know what the exact, how you describe it, but apparently, can somebody tell me, was Charlie Kirk, like, the casket was escorted by military or whatever, and Charlie Kirk, or not Charlie Kirk, and J.D. Vance as well? What the fuck? This guy was a political commentator. There is no reason why he should be held up like he was some, you know, military hero or, oh, honor guard or public official. This is insane, okay? Now, it would be helpful for us if we could compare this to a recent assassination, and thankfully, we can. Well, I say thankfully, that's kind of a dark way to put it, but Melissa Hortman and her husband were state legislators that were assassinated by a political hitman in Minnesota, and then he went right to another house and he shot a husband and a wife who were also politicians, or one of them was, the husband was, and then had more Democratic politicians to kill. No talk publicly about any of these people. Donald Trump was asked for comment. Donald Trump said Mike Waltz was a... You don't want to talk to him.
He appointed this guy to a position. I think the governor of Minnesota is still whacked down. I'm not calling him. Why would I call him? I could call him and say, hi, how you doing? The guy doesn't have a clue. He's a mess. So, you know, I could be nice and call him, but why waste time?
That's it. And then they lied about it. They said the guy was an employee of Mike Waltz. Some people spread the conspiracy that it was a Mike Waltz plan, okay? We didn't see any of that. These were for elected lawmakers, okay? We didn't see any of this insanity. So
somebody who cannot be filled in for, but
Waltz, not Waltz. Sorry. People keep referring to him differently.
In the White House complex and filling in for somebody who cannot be filled in for, but I'm going to try to do my best. My dear friend, the great Charlie Kirk. The last several days have been extremely hard for our country. They've been hard for me, hard for my family, hard for the countless people in this building who knew and loved Charlie Kirk. And of course, they've been hardest most of all for his darling wife, Erica, and their two beautiful children. Been hardest most of all for this building, who knew and loved Charlie Kirk, and of course, they've been hardest most of all for his darling wife, Erica, and okay, their two beautiful children.
Good one, Chief.
The thing is, every single person in this building, we owe something to Charlie. He was a joyful warrior for our country. He loved America. He devoted himself tirelessly to making our country a better place. He was a critical part of getting Donald Trump elected as president, getting me elected as vice president. And so much of our success over the last 7 months is due to his efforts, his staff.
Okay, hold on. Sorry, I want to say something real quick. Metatron apparently did a video. We'll watch that, I think, at 3. Somebody in chat said, I'm disappointed how shallow his political coverage was, given how in-depth his history stuff is. I had to unsub and question everything he does after his Destiny coverage. Okay, I'm not going to speak to his past content because I frankly just haven't seen it. So I can't say whether or not it's good or bad coverage generally in history or culture. I will say, I think I brought this up on a talk with somebody. I don't know if it was with Coleman Hughes or somebody else. Something that we've tried to do too much and that Republicans don't do, and I think this is a mistake, is sometimes we are scared to say what's right or wrong because it's associated with a certain political movement. And we're scared to take a definitive position on a thing because it might be associated with a political movement. And that causes a very corrosive thing in the mind where we believe that we can't talk about it in certain contexts because it's political. What I mean when I say that is in school, you can't, if you're teaching history or you're talking about some aspect of culture, it's considered rude or inappropriate or improper to tie it into current political things because you want to be relatively apolitical. Apoliticalness is a luxury of somebody not impacted by politics. Depending on how you live in this country, you do not have the luxury of being apolitical. Your history is not apolitical, and your existence on this planet is not apolitical. Definitionally speaking, if you live in a country, you are subject to its politics. There is no such thing as apoliticality. So sometimes people make the mistake of wanting to study history from an unbiased lens, and so they don't want to associate it at all with current or contemporary political stuff. I don't listen to his stuff at all, but I have huge props, mad respect for, is it Dan Carlson? Is he the guy who does the hardcore history? Is that his name? because he was willing to make some stronger statements about it. I saw that on Twitter. Oh, Dan Carlin, I have respect for that. Too many people are too obsessed with the idea of, oh, I don't want to make this political, so I'm just going to talk about ABC. You know, the Nazis were a political party. That was politics, right? World War II was politics. You know, we made a decision to attack Iran recently. That was politically informed by the current leaders in the United States. The decision to drop nuclear bombs on Japan, that was politics. Our unwillingness to join World War I or World War II until we were essentially attacked first, that was politics. A lot of these decisions that are made are politics. You cannot divorce politics from everything else. You're sanitizing something so extremely to the point of almost saying nothing of value, or at least you're losing so much of the value by doing it. You have to be very careful of that. Okay, sorry. These are just some things that...
And so much of our success over the last 7 months is due to his efforts, his staffing, his support, and his friendship. I don't think that I'm alone in saying that Charlie was the smartest political operative I ever met. Everyone knew him as this fearless debater, this guy who would take the conservative message into hostile places and inspire younger generations to have courage. One thing that's hit a lot of those young Americans over the last week was how Charlie was there for them when others were not. When they were afraid to speak their minds, when they were afraid of what a professor would say, when they were afraid that they would be shouted down by their peers, Charlie was there showing them that they could be courageous and that they could be bold. Charlie was a visionary. He was a luminary. He brought together people. He didn't just teach people how to speak. He didn't just teach people what to say. He didn't just teach people they could actually speak their mind on campus. He created a whole social network for an entire generation of young people. I know people who met their husband, who met their wife, who met the best man at their wedding at a TPUSA event. Because as you guys all know, it's not just about speaking our mind, it's about making friends along the way and creating that support network that won an election and that staffed the current federal government.
I'm so glad I got rid of this retweet. They're all using it now.
Much to Charlie. I've had friends reach out in just the last couple of days who sent me messages, screenshots, that they exchanged with Charlie in the run-up to me getting selected by the president as his vice presidential running mate. And it's such an honor to have people show me that Charlie said, we want JD to be the VP nominee. And I just had a conversation with the president, and I think things are actually going well.
Is this Vance trying to establish his image as Trump's successor? No, this is the cult establishing ownership over Charlie Kirk and his legacy to cast themselves as victims against the far left who they are blaming the shooting on. This is just like, it's making sure that there is an undoubted ownership over it so that every American can see that Charlie Kirk was part of MAGA and part of the right. And we have the vice president here to be a part of that so that you know that when the radical left attacked us, the 22-year-old white guy who was raised in a Mormon family from the state of Utah, who went to trade school, like all good conservatives have to, that the leftists, that when they attacked us, this is who they attacked. They attacked you.
I think he's actually going to choose J.D. Vance. Do you know what it means to me that such a good guy, such a good friend, such a lion and visionary of our movement was advocating for me? So I wanted to use this show today to advocate for Charlie, to talk about him, to talk about what kind of a guy he was, to talk about what kind of a man he was, what kind of a husband and father he was, and to take people, most of them from inside the administration, but some of them from without, who knew Charlie best, and to talk about what he meant to them, what he meant to this administration, and what he meant to the conservative movement. I was very honored a couple of days ago, on September the 11th, 2025, to fly out to Utah, where Charlie was shot and killed, to meet his wife, to meet his mom and his dad, his sister, all just incredible people who didn't deserve to have this happen to them. And I was also honored to be able to take Charlie's remains from Utah to Arizona. It was an amazing, amazing thing. It was heartbreaking, and it was sad, and it was terrible. But what an honor it was for me and my family to be welcomed in to the Kirk inner circle at their moment of grief. There are a few things that I want to talk about just from that moment. First of all, when I first met Erica, his lovely wife, and such an incredibly brave soul. I'm not sure if you saw her remarks after Charlie died. If you haven't, I would encourage you to go and see them, because you see this raw grief and incredible courage all in the same moment. And that's what we need right now. We need to grieve, but we also need this courage in this moment more than we've ever needed it. She gave me a hug, and she was heartbroken, as of course she would be. And she said that she loved him so much. And I said, Erica, he loved you so much. He died way too young, but he died a happy man because of you, because of the family that you gave him, because of the home and the life that you guys had built together. And we sat for about an hour and we talked about Charlie. And, you know, in these moments, you don't know what to say. I'm a person who literally speaks for a living, and I had no idea what to say. And I didn't try to console her, because how can you console a person who just lost a loving husband and father? But we just talked about Charlie. We talked about who he was. We talked about some of our favorite stories. We talked about some of his idiosyncrasies and all the things that made Charlie Kirk who he was.
It feels like even after Kirk's death, the pundits aren't scared. Is it just because they feel they can capitalize on it better? I feel like as a grifter, I just take my bag and dip. Well, one, a lot of these guys don't do super public events. Two, people like J.D. Vance have Secret Service protection. So they've got an entire agency inside the White House that is dedicated to their safety and security. One, two, three, this is kind of the darker version, but they hold a lot of the executive power right now in that if things were to go to, you know, like some kind of full scale violent conflict, he's the commander in chief. President Donald Trump controls the military. So would they invite it, that kind of fighting? I mean, if they were to ever have it, now would be the time to do it, you know?
And she said something to me that I will never forget. My wife was there. It was just me and my wife on my side. And then a lot of people from the Turning Points family, a lot of people from Charlie's family. And she said to me that Charlie never raised his voice, that he never cussed at her, that he was never cross or mean-spirited to her. And look, I'm a husband. I'm proud of being a husband. I think that on the great balance of things that I'm a pretty good husband, but I can never say that I was never unpleasant with my wife. I can never say that I've never raised my voice to my wife. Like most husbands, even the good ones, we're sometimes imperfect. And
people like Hutch need to understand that Dems need to control the narrative right away while the cement is wet. I feel like he thinks the left is avowing is being heard. Meanwhile, Trump is going after news orgs and media apparatus with lawsuits. Correct. The problem is when people always say, not now, not now, not now. The reason why Republicans say this is because they know that now is the only time that matters. That school shooting that happened on the same day that Charlie Kirk died, no one will ever know anything about that. No one's going to talk about it. It's not going to get any media. No one cares. That's like literally memory hold. Nobody cares. That's gone. You have a moment in time, especially now, as the moments in time are getting shorter and shorter and shorter because of TikTok, the internet, the news cycles, whatever else, right? Your moments in time where the public attention is captured on a particular topic is very, very, very slim. And Republicans aren't counting on you. Hey, we need a 3-day break. We just had our own guy get shot and killed. Can you guys please all disavow while all of us call for civil war and blame you for it? It's like, okay, that's fair, right? We'll be humans, I guess. And then 3 days later, okay, we need to talk about what's going on your guys' side. What? I don't know. Okay. And then they move to the next thing. It's like, oh, okay. That pattern has played out over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. How many debates do you see me have with people where they roll their eyes when I bring up the Gen 6 stuff and they go, oh my God, you're bringing up Gen 6 again? Bro, we've moved on from that. Moved on from that? Less than a year ago, you guys pardoned every single person associated with it. Also, moved on from that. If we've moved on from that, why the f*** do you still bring up all the violence of BLM? They haven't, and they know they haven't. That's a game that's being played on their end, right?
I took for that moment that I needed to be a better husband, and I needed to be a better father. Because of all these moments that I share just in the last few days, the books that I've read to my kids, going up to their bedroom and kissing
them. Do you think in this show, are they going to recognize any of the Democrats or lawmakers that said that the violence is unacceptable, that said we need to turn down the rhetoric? Any of them? And number one, number two, are they going to call on Donald Trump to say that he should call for a cessation in violence, that he should call for both sides to bring down their, I guess, weapons?
I'm hugging them before bed. I just realized that all of these moments that I get to have, Charlie is not able to have them anymore. And Charlie's kids and his beautiful wife are not able to have them anymore. And maybe the best way that I can contribute and the best way that I can honor my dear friend is to be the best husband that I can be, to be the kind of husband to my wife that he was to his. You know, we talked all the time about the most important thing you could do is not vote for a particular candidate. It was to become, if you were a young man, a husband and a father. He talked about the joy that came from fatherhood, the joy that came from raising a family and being part of their growth and their development and all the incredible things that happen when you get to be a husband and father. And that is the way that I'm going to honor my friend, is to be the very best at that most important job that I can be. But that's not the only way that I'm going to honor Charlie. And there's going to be a lot of discussion over the next 2 hours of this radio program about what exactly that looks like. It's important, and Erica asked me this, to make sure that his movement, the movement that Charlie started, has to keep going. We have to build upon it. We have to add to it. We have to make sure that the next generation of young people feels confident and courageous to speak their mind and to speak the truth. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about why do we do this? Of course, we do this so that we can enact good public policy and take back our country. We're going to talk with senior officials of the administration about what we're trying to do to honor Charlie's legacy in that way.
Did you listen to the critique by Hutch? He said Republicans are losing heart in local elections and that we don't disavow violence to get votes, but because it's the right thing to do to bring down the temperature, even if it's unfair. It doesn't bring down the temperature, number one. Number two, remember my critique on the election. When Republicans say we won huge, okay, they're wrong, all right? However, when Democrats say, well, they barely won, it's not like it was that far off, they're also wrong, okay? Both sides are wrong, but for totally different reasons. Republicans like to act like they have this massive consensus built across the United States and that so many people are in love with Trump and the Republican Party. That's bullshit, okay? They barely won the election. It was a plurality of the popular vote, not even a majority, a plurality of the popular vote. And they happened to win the 7 swing states, but it was with like a 250,000 vote margin, okay? I think across all 7 states. It was like less than 350,000 votes, I think, okay? Now, they present that as a massive majority, but that's not true. Now, on the Democrat side, it might be, and depending on who I'm arguing with, right, I'll say, well, it wasn't a landslide victory. But the reality is that should have been a 48, 49 state landslide to Kamala Harris, right? If a convicted rape, I was trying to be hyperbolic, but I realized that that applied to Trump. If Hitler came back from the dead and ran in an election against Jesus Christ himself, okay, and Hitler were to lose the election by one swing state, you would never walk away from that election feeling like you'd accomplished something good. You would walk away from that election feeling like something is deeply broken and rotted and corroded in your country. And the feeling should be the same for Trump. Like, did Democrats win in 2020? Yes. Was it because Donald Trump, you know, tried to overthrow the country and everything else? Well, no, we didn't even vote on that technically, right? January 6th was after the election, right? Definitionally. We probably won on the inflation stuff in the economy, you know, 2024, when it was time for voters to tell us, how did you feel about all of the illegality? How did you feel about Jan 6? How did you feel about everything else? Well, they said that, or not, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say inflation, on COVID related stuff, probably, right? The voters said they didn't care. They didn't give a f-. So while it might be the case that we, even if we win the next election, even if we win in 2028, which I still think we will, assuming we still have elections, I still think we're going to win. I think we're going to win midterms pretty well. I think we're going to win the next presidential election pretty hard, I think. It should be deeply concerning that half the country right now is okay with where we're at. And there are two groups that you can criticize here, and both are equally bad, even though some people say the latter is not as bad as the former. You've got the very politically incentivized group, like, or the very politically involved group who say, oh, well, you know, I know a lot about politics. Like, how the f*** can you support this? Rightfully, those people are condemned. Then you have people say, well, you don't understand, Destiny. A lot of people don't really follow politics that closely. A lot of people don't know about a lot of this shit. I do understand that, and I do know that, and I fully accept that. That's almost worse, right? It can't be the case that 10% of the country is driving us to civil war and the other 90% is just disaffected or disinterested. That's a failure in democracy. Remember, okay, we don't pass down political titles through family name, and we don't have an oligarch or some what other type of royal, you know, familial, non-democratic system to install new leadership. Every single person, that means you, that means the crazy dude down the street, that means Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Everybody goes to the ballot box and one person has one vote. We all have an equal say on who our next leader is. Democracy is somewhat reliant on the public following at least something related to what's going on in the country, okay? And other people's lives, not even necessarily your own. Maybe it's the millions of people who relied on USAID. Maybe it's people in the country who's relying on funding for future medical research. Maybe it's people in other countries who look to the United States for leadership or guidance on conflict. It could be the people dying in ditches in Ukraine. It could be children dying in Gaza of starvation. Everybody is looking to the U.S. voter for the direction that the United States is going to take in the world. It's not acceptable to say that people are just totally so disconnected that they can't have any mind for it at all. If that is the case, then the experiment for American democracy fails at this point, and then we move to another form of governance, right? We would say at this point, it's the system is too complicated that the average voter can't be entrusted to responsibly vote for leadership, and you need something different at that point, which might be the case. I think that would be sad, but that might be the case. Maybe that is, maybe this kind of government is untenable in a situation that's this complex. I don't think we're at that case yet. I think that our media environment and our leadership in that environment and our political leaders, I think, can change. But yeah.
Of course, we have to make sure that the killer is brought to justice. And importantly, we have to talk about this incredibly destructive movement of left-wing extremism that has grown up over the last few years. And I believe is part of the reason why Charlie was killed by an assassin's bullet. We're going to talk about how to dismantle that and how to bring real unity that can only come when we tell the truth. And everybody knows that they can speak their mind about the issues of the day without being cut down by a murderer's gun. We're going to talk about all of those things.
Wait, real quick, because I called up Posobiec on this on the show. That's a really brutal show. I don't think I look good. It's just unhinged. I hate, dude, that was a horrible show. Jack Posobiec said that he got killed with a bullet that said anti-fascist or whatever on it. He got killed by the bulgy-wulgy bullet, right? Was I wrong on that or right on that? Because I laughed at him and I told him he didn't get the bullet right. He's so performative. It was the bulgy-wulgy bullet, right? Okay, thank God. All right. What a horrible f-ing show. And Anna, I have Anna Kasparian and Andrew Wilson on the panel. And Anna was the one trying to bring up all the weird personal attacks too. She's actually so brain broken on Twitter. I cannot believe this woman's whole political ideology is now redefined based on who bullied her on Twitter. It's actually unreal to me.
Friends of Charlie, with people in the administration, with people that he knew. On a podcast a couple of months back, Charlie was asked about how he wanted to be remembered if he died. His answer, I want to be remembered for courage, for my faith. That would be...
How are people blaming the Groypers for radicalizing people while not acknowledging that radicalization was the same goal as Kirk? How is it that the left is not drawing connection between Trump and Fuentes while the media connects Robinson slash trans? The trans connection is just so tenuous and desperate. Bro, they would have found a single trans kid in this guy's friends list in order to say that he was like trans radicalized. At this point, has anybody released any info? Did he actually live with that trans person ever? Is that even confirmed? Does anybody even know that yet? Or are we still just going off word from the one reporter? We went from trans shooter to trans bullet to trans virtual roommate? Because he did virtual classes, right? We don't even know if they're trans, actually. I don't even know. Yeah.
A couple of months back, Charlie was asked about how he'd want to be remembered if he died. His answer, I want to be remembered for courage, for my faith. That would be the most important thing. The most important thing is my faith. And that was Charlie. And in this dark moment for our country, I think that's the greatest lesson any of us can take from Charlie. To have faith in the Lord and to be bold in how we glorify him. To be bold in our pursuits as Charlie was in his. So that's what we're going to spend a little bit of time doing this afternoon. Keeping this incredible show he created going and hearing from some of the people who were so fortunate to call Charlie a friend. We're going to pay tribute to his courageous legacy and we're going to commit to keep it forever alive. I'm looking forward to this. Join us.
Destiny, stop being retarded. You can move into uni-associated housing semester one and have several roommates. This is very common. I have no idea what your statement is supposed to say there. Do you think I don't know that there is dorm housing on campus? That's what I initially thought, but then somebody corrected me and said that they did remote schooling. That he didn't even go to college because they did remote learning because it was COVID. I don't even know if he was in a dorm. That's why I asked. If he did all online classes or whatever, I don't even know if he even shared a room with any of these other people. I have no idea. I don't think there's been any statements made about that. Somebody said Cash tweeted it. Correction. Cash Patel tweeted out a picture of a Fox News article. This is unbelievable. Holy shit. You're not beating the stereotypes, Captain Indian immigrant, when you're running the FBI like a call center. All this guy did was accept a phone call from the dad. That's the only work they did. Okay? Are you kidding me? And now he's quoting Fox News articles? Give me a break.
Really? The bagpipes?
But you see him. Why would he see the person in the chat before talking about war policy?
So, look, time out. Just so we're clear, I'm sure you've been added to group chats with 30 or 40 people sometimes, and you enter in with trust that every acronym is actually a government official. Obviously, that will not happen again. Just so we're clear, Signal was an approved chat by the Biden administration. It's an approved secure channel by...
He's lying. These are all lies, right? Lies, lies, lies. Lies and obfuscation. He lies the same way that, the way that Taylor Lorenz lied to me in a conversation, right? Signal was an approved government communication thing. Yeah, that is true. That is true. It was. The same way that chemotherapy, it can be different types of chemo can be approved treatments for cancer. If your doctor gives you chemo when you have a headache, you would call the doctor a fucking lunatic. Signal was not approved for secured, classified, SCTSI, military ops conversations. Those are supposed to happen in SCIFs. That is a lie. It's a misdirection. It's a lie with a truthful underlying fact, but it's an avoidance of the question. Signal was not approved for these types of communications.
Is actually a government official. Obviously, that will not happen again. Just so we're clear, Signal was an approved chat by the Biden administration.
Even what he's saying...
See him. Why would he see the
person? Even what he's saying betrays an utter... I need to stop saying misunderstanding or incorrect. He's lying.
...person is in the chat before talking about war policy.
So, well, time out. Just so we're clear... I'm sure you've been added to group chats with 30 or 40 people sometimes, and you enter in with trust that every...
No! This is one of the most fundamental layers of operational security. You do not trust. This is why you work in secured areas. If you had trust with everybody, there would be no need for operational security. What a stupid fucking statement. Well, I'm sure if you were added to a group chat with 30 people, you would trust them all. No! That's why you're in SCIFs!
Every acronym is actually a government official. Obviously, that will not happen again. Just so we're clear, Signal was an approved...
Also, I don't even know if was it Jeffrey Goldberg? I keep saying that name. Was he the guy who was added to the group chat? I don't even think he had. Did he have a... He wasn't, like, dressed up. Like, his account wasn't hidden or, like, put his, like, FBI, NSA, CIA, was it? I think it was just his name, wasn't it? Where's his idea that he was added? He's making it sound like he snuck into this chat.
By the Biden administration. It's an approved secure channel by...
I'm not talking shit on the Signal.
However, timeout. Let me ask a question about Pete Hegseth.
So we lie, and now we pivot to something different. Nice.
Would you rather have a warfighter or a bureaucrat run the United States military?
A warfighter? Was Hegseth even in the military? Was he? He might have been. I don't know if he's managed any large military operations or anything. What was Hegseth? Was he in the Army for 4 or 5 years? I forget. This is our general... No, National Guard based.
I would rather have somebody that doesn't have a history of alcoholism. I'd rather have somebody that, I mean, realistically.
Wow. So do you think how about Mark Milley and Lloyd Austin? Were they better at running the U.S. military than Pete Hegseth?
I mean, I think you're going to probably start talking about how there's higher enlistment numbers. Yeah, not only that. Hegseth.
But also, this whole thing is a diversion anyway. Nobody is, like, he's taking the bait on this, unfortunately.
Do you see how good it is when you get to dictate the battlefield? I need you to, there's another point I'm going to be pushing on a lot, okay? When you're on the defense, you can never, ever, ever win. Is it tennis or Pong? What am I thinking of? Where if you're not serving, you can never score a point, right? Am I making that up? Was that just high school? Like, it's only the person who serves that can score. If you successfully defend, then you get to serve next and then you get to score a point. What am I thinking of? Is that table tennis? None of both? What am I thinking of? Am I losing my mind? Volleyball? Is it volleyball? You were supposed to win if you serve in tennis. Volleyball. I feel like I played some game in high school like this. Those are weird high school rules. Oh, well, okay, never mind. Forget it. Delete that portion of the VOD. The point still stands. If you're playing defense, you can never win. You can only ever successfully defend. Okay, so when you're constantly on the defense here, even if he wins this argument about, I don't even know what he's arguing about now, the histories of the people involved, the point was supposed to be about the behavior on Signal, which was unacceptable. It was completely and totally unacceptable. Also, I say this thing a lot, okay? When I say that the news cycles are short, okay, that there are 3 days news cycles, that whatever else, and I say they're short, that's by design right now by the Republicans. Because remember, the emails, that was not short. We heard about those fucking emails for months. And nobody even gained access to Hillary Clinton's email server in an unauthorized manner. That didn't even happen. That didn't even happen. Whereas there was an unauthorized user, Jeffrey Goldberg, in the Signal chat.
So recruitment in the military is up majorly. Thank you, Pete Hegseth. He's doing a pretty good job. Number two, procurement. We're saving money. Estimates are that we'll save hundreds of billions of dollars.
None of this even matters. None of this even matters. People are saying I'm thinking of pickleball. I know I'm not thinking of pickleball because I have no idea what that is. It sounds like some bonger shit or some shit that I don't give a fuck about. And I hate pickles too, so fuck you.
Efficiency. War games are up. We are, the amount of war games we're doing in the Southeast Pacific has increased by 30%. This is a military town here in San Diego. They have a massive increase in people wanting to join the Navy, wanting to join the military. That wasn't happening under Biden. The morale is actually 30 points higher now that Pete Hegseth, a warfighter's warfighter, is running the U.S. military.
We have a complete difference. We're never going to agree on this.
No, but not agree, but
like, do you see, he's on the attack now, right? Even if he were to successfully defend some of these points, who cares? Even if Charlie Kirk was right on all these points, none of this excuses the behavior for Signal. Like, if you wanted to go on the offense and counter, right? Oh, Hillary's emails. Wasn't it better that Hillary had a private email server? What do you mean? Isn't that not allowed? Well, didn't the Russians hack the DNC and the DCCC? But they didn't hack Hillary's emails, right? Technically, Hillary's emails were more secure than all the emails on the DNC servers or the DCCC servers, right? And then you could argue maybe that they could pivot and say, well, the DNC and the DCCC, those aren't classified email servers, so it's different. It's like, oh, well, didn't the Russians already hack and leak like social security numbers and everything else? Maybe Hillary Clinton's email server is actually the most secure place for the emails. This is a retarded argument, in my opinion. But this is an offensive argument that at least keeps the fight on there. But this is like, you see, like it's just attack, attack, attack. And then you never have to be held accountable. You never have to defend any point that you bring up.
Don't then prove the evidence. What is one number that is worse for the U.S. military now that Pete Hegseth is in control?
The numbers.
Look at that. What a great. How about the number of times a Signal chat has been used to conduct official military operations? Maybe?
That you're talking about are numbers that I actually actively do not care about because I think that we have an overly powerful military and I think too much of our money goes to the military.
I know, but like, tell me one thing he's done, like numerically, like empirically, judge his performance, right? What is one thing that you could say, wow, the Pentagon is in a worst place because of Pete Hegseth?
I would say his inconsistent foreign policy where he backs on statements depending on whether or not Donald Trump has heard them or not. Like in the beginning, we were talking about what happened with Ukraine and Russia. Like they've had disagreements already within the first like couple months of the administration.
What? But first of all, the president is the commander in chief, so he executes the running of the military.
I'm just saying that there
he's
has
the operations manager.
I understand
that. And so when you want a military, you have recruitment going up, you have war games going up, you have morale going up. You have, by the way, how about this? Do you agree that physical fitness standards for men and women should be the same in the U.S. military?
Yes.
Pete Hegseth is to thank for that. He has brought physical fitness standards to be the same for men and women. Lloyd Austin didn't do that. Mark Milley didn't do that. Do you also agree that we should not have like transgender pronoun type policing of our military members on the front lines of combat?
See, the thing is
Pete Hegseth has gotten rid of all that. But I'm saying you're trying to make a
This was before he died, obviously, right? But keep in mind that we've gone from trans people are incapable of serving their country in the military, regardless of what the standards are, because trans people did have standards that they had to meet. They're incapable of it. We went from that to trans people might actually be Jason Bourne equivalents. And we think that there was a 6-member trans group that actually plotted and planned the Charlie Kirk assassination. Now you're making an argument for trans Navy SEALs, right? We switched positions on that in one day because they don't believe in any of this, right? If the standards are so important that men and women should match the same standards no matter what, okay, fine. Then if trans people can match the standards, then why do you care if they're trans or not, right? They want to serve, let them serve, no?
mention that he's not qualified. Okay. The military is in a much better place, thanks to him, only after 100 days, man. And that's the that is the weakest example of all the ones that you have in the cabinet. You didn't address Rubio, you didn't address Noem, you didn't address Bessent, you didn't address Lutnick, you didn't address Bobby Kennedy, you didn't address all these people. So I have to ask
you a question. I can continue addressing people.
But every one of these departments is in a substantially and an empirically better place than it was.
Okay, including the Department of Education that's been completely defunded and somebody who literally...
I'm so glad it's being defunded.
Okay, I bet you are, but guess what? Most Americans aren't, and that's the reality.
Wrong. Donald Trump...
Okay, yeah, just because you have a bunch of people here saying that doesn't mean that's reality.
Let me prove it to you. Donald Trump ran on a pledge to get rid of the Department of Education. We can agree with that? Yes or no?
Yes.
He won a popular vote. The vast majority of people voted knowing that the Department of Education was going to get eliminated.
If you truly believe that the vast majority of people were educated enough about the fact of Donald Trump's opinion...
Oh, voters aren't very smart. Now that's what we're going after.
No, I'm simply just responding to what you said. What you said
insult
is
the voters. They don't know.
No, I know a lot of people that voted for Trump who had absolutely no idea that he was going to defund the... And of course, this is just an anecdote, but I know that this is the truth. Not everybody, when they vote, looks at every single little thing and every little aspect like you and I might of why we would vote for somebody. Like, we're both political commentators.
Fine. And as a political commentator, then I will argue more forcefully against you because now you're not just like a college kid searching for this. Has education in America improved or gotten worse since the Department of Education was formed?
It has literally been 3 months. I have absolutely no idea.
Since the Department of Education was formed in the 70s. We now have 50 years of evidence. Has American education gotten better since we've had a Department of Education, or has it gotten worse?
I personally don't think that has to do with the Department of Education.
He says that, I haven't dug deeply into this, but my understanding is you need to hardcore separate out like college from K through 12. And conservatives love to combine these two things, but they're totally different. When you talk about like all the money the Department of Education spends and everything, and everything having to do with student loans and everything, this is like college related stuff. Are we going to say that our colleges have gotten worse? Because our colleges were some of the like prestigious things of the world, right? Everybody around the world wants to come to the United States for our Ivy League schools. And we're trying to say that the education has gotten worse at our universities? Really? Or are we having problems with K through 12 education? Because it's not the fault of the Department of Education.
And when you've spent over
regardless of the existence of the Department of Education, remember, they have the ability. All the states control their own curriculum, period. They have forever. The Department of Education doesn't dictate curriculum to anybody.
Personally, don't think that has to do with the Department of Education.
When you spend over $4.5 trillion with one federal department, and we have 30 schools in Chicago where a fifth grader cannot read at grade level. We have 35 schools in Baltimore where kids cannot do math or reading at grade level. We cannot find a single school, not a single school in downtown Detroit, where by the time they graduate high school in the heavily black areas, that they're proficient in reading or math. We are now like 30.
Like, does the Department of Education control any of the curriculum or any of the educational outcomes in any of those places? Not really, right? If you don't talk about universities or colleges, maybe. Although the DOE doesn't dictate curriculum to them either, but that's where a lot of the funding comes from. But this is just a non sequitur after non sequitur after non sequitur. But congratulations, you got that random kid that stepped up to the microphone. Good job.
Welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show. This is Vice President J.D. Vance. Joining me now is Stephen Miller, White House Deputy Chief of Staff, dear friend of mine and dear friend of Charlie Kirk's. And before I get into the nitty-gritty of
audio management. We've got Goebbels here as well. Thank you to manage everything. Here we go.
I want to talk with Stephen about, there's a lot of questions about the investigation, where we are in the investigation. I want to be respectful to the FBI's process, but just know that we are on top of this and the entire administration is trying to do as much as possible to find everything that we can about what led to this, about how we got here, and of course, ultimately, how an assassin took Charlie's life. I wanted to zoom out with Stephen a little bit and talk about all of the ways that we're trying to figure out how to prevent this festering violence that you see on the far left from becoming even more and more mainstream.
Oh, on the far left. True. Yes, true. Thank God we're here to talk about that.
Before I do that, Stephen, I want to do this with every guest because you're a friend of Charlie's, and one of the things I'm hoping that people get out of this is an understanding for the kind of guy that Charlie was, who he was. And so before I talk to you about what we're doing to try to prevent something like this from happening again, maybe you could just talk about why you love Charlie, what memories you have of him, something that would give our audience a sense of what he was behind the microphone.
A sense of how important he is to the cult and that all of us see ourselves as one unified entity and how humanized this guy is and how demonish or demonic and horrible the left is for attacking him. True.
Yeah. I've known Charlie for 10 years. He was a treasured friend. And, it's going to sound, he made you believe more in yourself, is the best way I could put that.
That's right.
He was your biggest cheerleader. He would, if I was working on a hard project, an important executive order, a major new initiative, he would give me the strength and the focus to get it done.
That's right.
He was everybody's supporter, enthusiast, cheerleader, promoter. He made all of us better every single day. The memory that I keep turning to is not a single memory, it's a period of a couple months after we won the election. And Charlie was in the campaign or the transition office every single day. And from dawn till dusk, volunteering his time to get into the weeds, the nitty gritty of government. And he was so damn excited. I mean, it really hurts to think about it right now. He was so excited about all of us being here. And we would be talking about every executive order, every new regulation, every new policy plan. It was such a thrill for me to get to spend a few months of my life, because, you know, he came from the nonprofit, the activist world. I came from the government world. And in this transition, to be able to work hand in hand, take all of his ideas from being the leader of TPUSA, spending time with college students, spending time with activists, and then be able to be with us in the transition to plan out the next step of our government, that was an experience for which I will always be grateful. And the last thing I'll say is that, to an earlier point, Charlie would send me messages all the time, just saying, you know, great work, or here's a new idea, or here's what I think will take this to the next level. And I took them all to heart. And
somebody mentioned this. There really should be more damaging penalties for major news networks publishing disinformation, perhaps a leaderboard with a tax rate for each news network corresponding to how much utter nonsense they spewed in such shameless fashion. The problem with stuff like this is because people are both siding so hard, the left both sides because they believe in it, and the right weaponizes both sides to attack the left. The problem is that when you have fact checkers that come down harder on one side, everybody just assumes that they must be biased. Right? This is why we got rid of fact checking. Okay, we can't accept the fact that COVID wasn't created in a bioweapons lab to infect us. We can't accept the fact that maybe mRNA vaccines were actually a miraculous improvement in science and not something that the Jews or some other nefarious pharmaceutical company pushed on us to poison us and kill us. We can't accept the fact that, you know, maybe Russia did have a massive hand in engaging in foreign psyops and shit into our domestic politics. Maybe it is the fact that climate change is probably a real thing and it's not caused by Jewish weather machines in the Gulf of America that are causing hurricanes to hit red states. We just can't have the problem with fact checking is if you would bring out any fact checker right now, it would obliterate the Conservative Party because they live in delusion. It's so how can you introduce any kind of fact checking without the Republican Party immediately revolting? There's a reason why Mark Zuckerberg went on was it Joe Rogan where he made the announcement that they got rid of fact-checking? Or this might have just been a Twitter video that he put out on his own. Was it on Twitter that this he posted this video where he talked about how they were going to get rid of fact-checkers because they thought that it was too biased?
Hey, everyone. I want to talk about something important today because it's time to get back to our roots around free expression on Facebook and Instagram. I started building social media to give people a voice. I gave a speech at Georgetown 5 years ago about the importance of protecting free expression. And I still believe this today. But a lot has happened over the last several years. There's been widespread debate.
Free speech, remember, there's several things about this. One, freedom of expression is the idea that the government can't criminalize behavior, okay? Now, you could extend that out more to we ought to have a vigorous public debate about policy and stuff. That's fine as well. Freedom of speech is not some deontological good that in and of itself, you know, is a thing to be protected. Freedom of speech in a democracy is considered good and vital because from the freedom of speech, from people who can criticize the government or speak their truth about whatever social issues, from that, we engage in a dialogue that produces good for society. You would never say that freedom of speech is good if a bunch of people with megaphones were standing around every single other person screaming into it so nobody could hear each other, right? Freedom of speech is only a good, cherished thing in the U.S. because of the outcomes that we feel that it produces. If freedom of speech just led to constant noise and the inability for people to govern themselves, then that country would fall and fail, and then you would necessarily move to some other system. This idea of an unlimited – I don't think we have an unlimited right for literally anything. We don't have an unlimited right even for guns. We don't have an unlimited right even for speech, right? Conspiracy is a type of crime. Nobody wants to talk about responsibilities when it comes to freedom of speech. They only want to talk about having an unlimited amount of it so that people on the right or some alternative media people can abuse the fuck out of it to lie to you.
About potential.
That's not freedom of speech. It's just the freedom to lie is what these people generally advocate for.
Several years.
That's why you're seeing now the right leading probably the largest mass doxing campaign to try to get people fired from their jobs. A lot of these people, somebody was sending me this shit. I was looking through earlier ones. A lot of these people who were literally just saying that they were literally just like quoting Charlie Kirk's speech and stuff. They weren't even like glorifying his death. They were just talking about how they disagreed with the shit that he said. And they're trying to get them fired from their jobs and excised from their communities.
There's been widespread debate about potential harms from online content. Governments and legacy media have pushed to censor more and more. A lot of this is clearly political.
Destiny, I agree the right is more perpetrators of political violence, but the issue is the left is by far more okay with political violence. This is why we get stuck in the discourse. Everybody is okay with political violence. Again, people use politics sometimes to mean the thing that I don't like or don't care about. Everybody in this country, at the very least, 100% of the Conservative Party is okay with political violence. My guess is on the left, it's close to 100% as well. Now, I know there was some poll going around earlier showing like what percentage of people are okay with political violence. And I think for conservatives, I want to say it was like 20% said they were okay with it. That's just because they were too stupid to understand the question. Because if you ask conservatives, hey, why do we have a Second Amendment?
They would say, oh, well, one of the most important reasons is it's a function that allows us to fight against a tyrannical government. That's political violence. And every conservative basically believes in the right to own firearms, partly as a restrictive measure against an over-encumbrance government that's trying to take away your freedom. So everybody, to some extent, believes in political violence.
Push to censor more and more. A lot of this is clearly political, but there's also a lot of legitimately bad stuff out there. Drugs, terrorism, child exploitation. These are things that we take very seriously, and I want to make sure that we handle responsibly. So we built a lot of complex systems to moderate content. But the problem with complex systems is they make mistakes. Even if they accidentally censor just 1% of posts, that's millions of people. And we've reached a point where it's just too many mistakes and too much censorship. The recent elections also feel like a cultural tipping point towards once again prioritizing speech. So we're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. More specifically, here's what we're going to do. First, we're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes, similar to X, starting in the US. After Trump first got elected in 2016, the legacy media wrote nonstop about how misinformation was a threat to democracy.
They were right.
We tried in good faith to address those concerns.
They did.
Without becoming the arbiters of truth. But the fact checkers have just been too politically biased.
They are politically biased because one side is the one that's engaged in more lies. You have to be able to address the truth. How is it that your system that you create can address one side lying more without being accused of simply being politically biased, right? If reality favors one side more, what are you supposed to do there? Nobody's ever confronted with this question.
Have just been too politically biased and have destroyed more trust than they've created, especially in the US. So over the next couple of months, we're going to phase in a more comprehensive community notes system.
You want to talk about reality having an unfortunate liberal bias? Look at how much they keep trying to mind Grok and how much Grok keeps spitting out a liberal reality every single time conservatives try to queue it up for questioning, right?
Second, we're going to simplify our content policies and get rid of a bunch of restrictions on topics like immigration and gender that are just out of touch with mainstream discourse.
Unbelievable cuckening.
Guys, love the man so much.
He was our biggest supporter, yeah. Stephen, but he was also, if he disagreed, he would figure out how to get us to get where he wanted us to go.
Yes.
He was always such a big cheerleader.
Yes.
Right. The darkest moments of my life, it was Charlie who was on the phone saying, don't let him get to you. Keep on fighting. Keep on going. You're absolutely right. So I want to be mindful of time here. A lot of people are very worried about how we got here in the first place. And you have the crazies on the far left who are saying, oh, Stephen Miller and J.D. Vance, they're going to go after constitutionally protected speech. No, we're going to go after the NGO network that foments, facilitates. And
NGO is always a virtue signal for deep state. It is the ultimate. It's become the new deep state obsessive term. What the fuck is an NGO, a non-government organization that does what? Charity work or activism or something? Why are NGOs the fucking demon? Call it a particular organization and say particularly what you don't like about it. NGOs have become this new stand-in for deep. I say new, but people have cried about them forever.
Engages in violence. That's not okay. Violence is not okay in our system, and we want to make it less likely that that happens. Walk me through at a high level, like what you and I have been working on, what the whole administration has been working on to try to make sure that we don't reward and promote this craziness.
Yes, so it's an excellent question. I said this before, but it bears repeating. The last message that Charlie said.
When he speaks, notice that the audio is very slightly delayed by maybe 100 ms or something. The reason why you're hearing the echo is because he's got a lav mic on that picks up a lot of background noise. It has to, because it's a lav mic and it's not like directional. What's happening is when Vance is speaking, he's speaking, and then Stephen Miller's lav mic is picking up the echo, and that's why you're hearing it twice. So the audio mixer guy's having to turn it down every time he speaks.
That me was, I think it was just the day before we lost him, which is that we need to have an organized strategy to go after the left-wing organizations that are promoting violence in this country. And I will write those words onto my heart and I will carry them out. If people ask me, you know, what emotions I'm feeling right now, this is something people say, I mean, you kind of know the answer. There's incredible sadness, but there's incredible anger. And the thing about anger is that unfocused anger or blind rage is not a productive emotion.
Right.
But focused anger, righteous anger, directed for a just cause, is one of the most important agents of change in human history.
I've said this before, and he's absolutely right. And the conservatives are so good at directing their anger towards effective ends. They're so good at doing this. Occupy Wall Street did nothing because what the fuck were we mad about? Corporations are people? What the fuck does that even mean? BLM and all those protests were largely failed because why? What the fuck was the anger directed at? Abolish the police? What the fuck does that even mean? What are we even going to do with that? And even the places that tried, some of the defunding all failed on it, right? The left, partially because of the leftists, the socialists and the communists who try to hijack so much of the conversation, their goal, their end is anger for anger's sake. That's all they want. They don't care about policy. That's why they don't try to win any elections. And then liberals somehow have allowed that to get hijacked, probably because they're trying to live up to some standard. Oh, Anna called me Trump deranged today. She said, Destiny, you have TDS, your Trump derangement syndrome. What an unbelievable thing.
Probably showed that. Amen.
And we are going to channel all of the anger that we have over the organized campaign that led to this assassination to uproot and dismantle these terrorist networks. So let me explain.
The organized campaign that led to this assassination. Excuse me? What?
What that means. So.
You've got 30 seconds. It'll be quick, Stephen.
The organized.
You see, because his mic's not turned down. Hear the echo.
Boxing campaigns. The organized. So. You've
got 30 seconds. It'll be quick, Stephen.
The organized doxing camp.
Fuck. I didn't mean to click that.
Managing that you. But he looks at the. And engages.
Mission to plan out the next lawsuit and spending time is every executive order, every new regulation from the government. It was an experience for which I think.
So if he disagreed, he was such a big of go after constitutional
the organizations that are promoting violence in this country. The answer, there's incredible sadness, unfocused anger
okay.
directed Sorry. For a just cause is one of the most important agents of change in human history.
Probably showed that. Amen.
And we are going to channel all of the anger that we have over the organized campaign that led to this assassination
okay.
to uproot and dismantle these terrorist networks.
Number
so
one
let me explain
was,
what that means. So,
what's the first thing?
Number 30 seconds. Be quick, Stephen.
The organized doxing campaigns.
The largest organized doxing campaign that I was aware of prior to the Charlie Kirk murder. Does anybody know who it was? Libs of TikTok. Yes. Libs of TikTok would post individual people's TikToks or Instagram accounts or social medias whenever she could to try to get these people kicked out of their jobs or fired or excommunicated from their community or whatever, right? And now afterwards, it's this, I don't know, what is it, like Charlie's Murderers or something.com is this massive list of people who have said mean things about Charlie Kirk now.
Organized riots, the organized street violence, the organized...
Seconds, be quick, Stephen.
The organized doxing campaigns, the organized riots,
The organized riots, the largest organized riot in U.S. history was the January 6th insurrection. Donald Trump provided the motive. He riled these people up for a year, saying that there was going to be election fraud. He provided the means, okay? He invited them all to a particular place, encouraged them all to come and work with organizations, because it was the one that hosted the speech was the Women for Trump or whatever. And then he facilitated on the day of. He gave them the direction. They went and they did exactly what he wanted. The idea that he's trying to sell you here, I don't know if you guys are aware of this or not, but the talking point on the right is that all of these riots and protests, the big ones, are all funded and organized by George Soros. Like, I laugh about it on stream and then you guys laugh, but I hope you're aware that when they say things like paid protesters, they legitimately mean that. Like, if I were to call my mom and ask her, Mom, where do you think most of the protesters come from? She would say, I think that the Clinton Foundation and George Soros pay them to show up. These are mercenary protesters. They get paid to go from place to place and protest. None of it is real. That's what these people think. When he says organized protest, that's what he's talking about.
Organized street violence. The organized.
Seconds, be quick, Stephen.
The organized doxing campaigns. The organized riots. The organized street violence. The organized campaigns of dehumanization, vilification, posting people's addresses, combining that with message.
Dehumanization, vilification, calling Obama, calling the Clintons, socialists and communists year after year after year after year. They've been doing this for my entire life. That they've done this, okay? Posting people's addresses and calling for, like, why do you think Trump talks about the names of the judges in his cases or the names of people? He even got, I don't think he got contempt. I think he got chastised for it and threatened for it. But when Donald Trump was saying that the daughter of the judge of his case was a radical or whatever, look, what do you think this is for?
It's designed to trigger and incite violence in the actual organized cells that carry out and facilitate the violence. It is a vast domestic terror movement. And with God as my witness, we are going to use every resource we have at the Department of Justice, Homeland Security, and throughout this government to identify, disrupt, dismantle, and destroy these networks and make America safe again for the American people. It will happen, and we will do it in Charlie's name.
Thank you, Stephen. Don't go away. I'll be joined by a guest of Friends just in a few seconds. See you soon.
Wait, what is the...
Malcolm X, you were involved in a controversy some months ago with your leader. Is that over?
Well, I've been filing for the...
Wait, what is this? Will Patriot Front disappear immediately after we confirm Kash Patel? Yes, and what a coincidence that'll be. Weird prediction. If Kash Patel takes over the FBI, Patriot Front will disappear. Well, I don't understand what is the meme for this? Wait, Patriot Front marching through Huntington Beach chanting, say his name, Charlie Kirk. What was Patriot Front? Should I know about this? Is this some more f***ed up shit that I haven't even heard of before? Destiny, that they are feds. They think Patriot Front is an FBI psyop. Oh, wait. So the meme is that when Kash Patel becomes the head of the FBI, that liberals will stop psyoping. Well-known liberal James Comey. Like, remember, even if... It's just like you have to understand how unbelievable everything is. You have to understand how unbelievable everything is. Remember my Rob Nord debate.
Crossfire Hurricane, remember what Tulsi Gabbard and the Republicans are trying to sell us now? Crossfire Hurricane and all of the Russiagate stuff was Obama intentionally trying to nuke Donald Trump's chances of being the president. However, none of this was publicly announced until after the election. Meanwhile, James Comey was the head of the FBI, who was also rigging it against Trump, but he announced Hillary Clinton's email investigation and updates and conclusions like three different times publicly and kept this in the media for months, right? Like, in what world was the FBI ever helping Hillary Clinton win that election? But they've any fact, anything can be spun when you're constantly attacking. We're constantly telling people to think anything can be spun to believe anything, to make the people believe whatever they want to believe, whatever you want them to believe. Yeah.
It's time to overthrow the government. What are we doing? It's time to overthrow it. Overthrow it, man. White man, fight back. Go get a gun, Brad. Go get a gun. Fight back.
Our streets! Our streets!
Maybe copium, but I feel like this unhinged MAGA response won't actually play well for them long term. The normies in my life are saying both sides need to be less violent, obviously, but there's a heavy focus on the right being completely unhinged against anyone remotely liberal. My girlfriend's grandpa has no idea who Kirk is, but a radio host they listened to is apparently getting canceled for saying he didn't know who Kirk is. Normal people are not okay with the right wing response. I hope that is the case, but Donald Trump won the election again in 2024. You can go back and listen to me speak in 2021, 2022, and I said that I felt like that everybody was getting tired of the crazy Trump shit. And that's why like people were kind of like receding from that. But that wasn't the case, I think. What actually happened was we just had a reasonable president who was chill. And you had to try, I did say this a lot, especially 2022 onwards, you had to try so hard to get ass-pained about what Biden was saying. You had to try so hard to get so mad about him. But they still managed to do it, right? I don't even want to say even at its worst because there was nothing wrong with this speech. Somebody said, what does this piece look like to you? What would you be content with? Tell us all about your wishes. I want you to know what you expect to happen. Remember this, the red picture? It's only red because of how it's cut up, right? It was supposed to be red, white, and blue, I guess, but obviously the framing on the camera f***ed it up. But like from that speech, when has Donald Trump ever said anything as remotely uniting as this speech? This was supposed to be his most divisive speech. But together, we can choose a different path. We can choose a better path forward to the future possibility, a future to build and dream and hope. And we're on that path moving ahead. I know this nation. I know you, the American people. I know your courage. I know your hearts. And I know our history. This is a nation that honors our Constitution. We do not reject it. This is a nation that believes in the rule of law. We do not repudiate it. This is a nation that respects free and fair elections. We honor the will of the people. We do not deny it. And this is a nation that rejects violence as a political tool. We do not encourage violence. We are still in America that believes in honesty and decency and respect for others, patriotism, liberty, justice for all, hope, possibilities. We are still at our core a democracy. And yet history tells us that blind loyalty to a single leader and a willingness to engage in political violence is fatal to democracy. For a long time, we've told ourselves that American democracy is guaranteed, but it's not. We have to defend it, protect it, stand up for it, each and every one of us. That's why tonight I'm asking our nation to come together, unite behind the single purpose of defending our democracy, regardless of your ideology. Applause. Compare this to any speech that Donald Trump makes about talking about the radical left Democrats, Joe Biden and the auto pen. He can't do it. He cannot bring himself ever to make a statement even remotely as uniting as that.
Why would he see him? Why would he see the person who's in the chat before talking about
Why do they have hard outs on a podcast?
War policy. So,
I don't need to watch highlights of pretty hard debating. Good one. Good.
As a political commentator, then I will level. We have 35 schools in Baltimore where kids cannot do math or reading at grade level. We have that they're
The Charlie Kirk Show.
Welcome back. This is Vice President of these United States, J.D. Vance, your host for today's Charlie Kirk Show. Joining me now, and I'm excited about this one, are a few guys who, like me, were lucky enough to call Charlie their friend. I have Taylor Budowich, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff. Kaylin Doerr, in the middle, is the White House Deputy Communications Director. And Andrew Colvett is Charlie's longtime friend and the executive producer of the show. Gentlemen, thanks.
Optically, this is such a difficult thing to overcome because trying to describe what a griper is to a Fox News boomer is impossible. It doesn't matter. Even if, and now it turns out that it's almost certainly not the case, even if the shooter was a radical left-wing person who was radicalized by the Democratic Party, even if that was the case, our president, the president of the United States, should still be saying, everybody needs to calm down. Everybody needs to pull it back. Regardless, even if the shooter was an unhinged left-wing shooter. It's looking more and more like that definitely wasn't the case. But I mean, this would be the bare minimum expectation.
Thanks so much for joining me. Thanks for being a dear friend of Charlie. And I thought what I'd start with is, you know, we all knew Charlie the man, not just Charlie the personality or Charlie the celebrity or Charlie the guy who did debates on college campuses. I want to start with you, Taylor. What's something that you wish people knew about Charlie that they don't if they just watch his clips on X or YouTube or wherever?
With Charlie, what you see is what you get. And I think that was true even from my first interactions with him on the 2020 presidential campaign. We'd always be doing these fundraisers. Don Jr., Kimberly Guilfoyle, who was the Trump Victory Finance chair, would host these big fundraising events. Charlie was always the first one to show up. And we would do these team events where we'd make calls all day. And you'd always want Charlie on your team because the guy would get there first, make as many calls, and he was the best fundraiser that we had. But, you know, we have the not just the privilege of being Charlie's
friend. Nobody's going to calm down regardless of messaging. It's past that. You are so unbelievably wrong. I understand why you think that. But keep in mind that Donald Trump was able to get his party to move past Epstein in a week. He absolutely could turn down the temperature on everything right now. A united front of Republicans and Democrats saying, hey, we've reached an unacceptable boiling point in our democracy. Everybody needs to calm the f*** down. The president doesn't approve of this. The political leaders don't approve of this. Nobody likes you. Nobody likes this. It's not cool. It's not good. Everybody needs to tone it down. From Trump, that would be meaningfully important. From the Democratic leaders, not really. I don't think it helps at all, unfortunately. And I don't even mean that insofar as it doesn't help that they're saying it and the Republicans aren't. I'm just saying that I'm not even sure where the center left radical like shooters and stuff even are. The most you could point to is maybe like the BLM riots. But like, I feel like the radical left shooters are going to follow more of like the tanky communist shit anyway. Like the Bushnell guy that set himself on fire. That guy was a crazy pro-Pali dude, right? For the Scalise shooting, who was that guy? Did we know his background much, right? I don't know what his background was. Was it 2013? Maybe that guy was like radicalized by the Democratic Party. But like, remember, one of the key things that I hear people talk about with fascists, okay, whatever, but a lot of people do this, right? Is where your opponent is simultaneously weak and strong depending upon, you know, what cloak you need him to wear for a given argument. So Biden was this bumbling idiot that nobody could follow anywhere because he was a loser. He could barely speak, but also at the same time was somehow inciting mass violence against the Republicans. Like he was this hero that was inspiring radicalism. Biden was, but he also couldn't even string together a sentence and he was so senile. He fell apart in that debate. Like it can't be all of these things at once, right?
Friend, but seeing what he's built through Turning Point, and it became personal to me when my sister, who we're from California, and you know, is trying to find her way politically, and said, you know, I want to get involved. And we have the benefit of we can go to any.
Now, Dustin, you seem to care what these shooters thought. Meanwhile, the right just doesn't care. They make up whatever is convenient for their discourse. How do you win this? Well, I've already gone over how you win this. I just care because I think it's interesting to know, and it's good to know. If I felt like people were being radicalized on my end and went out and killed people, I would want to adjust my messaging. I don't want people to go out and kill people. I don't think political violence is good. I think it's corrosive to a democracy when people start to kill each other, and people are afraid of getting killed. What a chilling effect on speech. It's not good. It's not good. Yeah. And if I found out that some shooter was like, oh, I watched, you know, Destiny and all these other liberals, and I realized that I needed to take up arms and go and kill conservatives, like, no, it's not really what I'm saying. And I would adjust my messaging accordingly. So I think it is kind of important to know. But
new things that you didn't necessarily see in yourself. He was a true friend in that way. And I remember, you know, one particularly difficult moment, probably the hardest moment on the campaign trail for me, when we had an event in Arizona, I believe with a bunch of faith leaders. And it was the one time on the entire national campaign where I gave my chief of staff a hug and apologized to him because I was just, I hadn't seen the kids in 7 days.
This is all just like glazing.
What do you think is the most difficult part of replacing the great Charlie Kirk?
Well, I think, you know, you mentioned him being everyone's best cheerleader. And the last time I saw him, I have a lot of peace in my heart because I had a very good interaction with him, as we always do. I was wandering the hallways of the EOB, and I must have had a...
And that's when they tried to cut him down. At his strongest...
...of native-born, where it's 0.85%. One in seven kids lives in a mixed-status household. For 10 years.
You done?
That's pretty much...
5 years in prison. Okay. Now, I want to know, since it's a felony, law on the books, 8 U.S.C. 1312, yep. What should the penalty be?
Well...
Hello, everyone. Vice President J.D. Vance here. Welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show. So I am moonlighting as a radio host today, of course, in honor of my dear friend Charlie. And, you know, I wanted to be like Marco Rubio. I wanted to add an extra job here as the radio host and vice president here in the West Wing, here in the White House complex. But I have another person here who wears many hats and is one of the most gifted communicators I've ever seen, right up there with the great Charlie Kirk. I'm glad to be joined by Carolyn Leavitt, our press secretary. Carolyn, so good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Very kind. I appreciate your saying that.
So why don't you kick it off and tell us a little bit. So those who don't know who are listening or watching, you actually were involved with TPUSA very early on when you were in college. Tell me about that experience and about getting to know Charlie Kirk through that forum.
Sure. Well, I'm a Gen Z conservative, so I was really raised within the MAGA movement. And within the MAGA movement as a Gen Z conservative means you're very much a part of the Turning Point USA movement. And so my political education was not just through the rise of President Trump, but also the rise of Charlie Kirk.
Yep.
And watching him and listening to him, and I inquired about starting a Turning Point USA chapter.
How the f*** is the whole admin here? What did I say? Remember, it's the verticality. The integration is absolute, okay? It's important to their messaging.
They're on my college, St. Anselm College in Manchester, New Hampshire, where I went and where my political ambition and love of media and politics really began. And so just by watching Charlie from a distance was so inspiring to me as a young conservative woman. And then
now, because they're able to cast their side as being moderate somehow, because nobody can do politics, I guess, in the United States anymore, right? We're ignoring, like, what is she saying? Like, this is a person who was basically groomed and radicalized by Turning Point USA into being the, glorious leader's propaganda speaker in the White House, right? That's her job. But we can't even, like, approach that conversation because conservatives can't radicalize people and they can't groom people and because they're not radical at all. So
to know him personally when I decided to run for Congress, and he was a tremendous supporter and friend.
Right. So you literally communicate for a living. You're the person that speaks to the American people and the world on behalf of the White House every single day. Did you learn anything?
This is the person who told us that the IV marks that Donald Trump has all over his on his finger. I don't know what the name of this vein or artery is. You normally get injections in your vein, right? I think it's if you can't find veins in the arm because the person's skin is f***ed or their veins are f***ed or whatever reason, you can't do it, right? We're told that the bruising that's caused there isn't from the IVs that he's certainly getting. It's because he shakes so many hands.
Welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show. Joining me now is my friend and a close friend of Charlie, the great Tucker Carlson. Tucker, thank you so much for being here. And we have 10 minutes, Tucker. And just to give you guys at home a little behind the scenes, the producer just showed Tucker a sign that said rap. And Tucker looked at it and said, this is expand on your point, right? So if we end up going 35 minutes, you'll know it's not the host's fault. It's Tucker Carlson's fault.
We read what we want to read.
But I had, Tucker, I think you know this, and some of you know.
This guy who has thrown America under the bus more than any other ex-political figure.
5 minutes, you'll know
right?
It's not the host's fault. It's Tucker Carlson's fault.
We read what we want to read.
But
just remember, okay? Tucker Carlson was part of Fox News. He was the largest host in the United States of America, okay? Tucker Carlson was a guy who was taking... who is taking talking points directly from the Trump campaign and knowingly lying to every single person in America relating to voter fraud in the United States, which was one of the driving factors behind Americans not believing in the results of the 2020 election. To this day, most Republicans don't. Okay, to this day, percentage of Republicans believe 2020 election results. This was 2023. Percentage of Republicans who think Biden's 2020 win was illegitimate ticks back up to near 70%. This is in 2023. I think it's over 80% now. I feel like I read that recently. Even this number, even 20 or 30% would be insane, right? This is the United States of America, okay? 20 or 30% of the party doesn't believe that the election was legitimate, but it's not even that. It's nearly 70% a year ago, right? Part of the reason why people believe that was because people like Tucker Carlson. Where's the slide? There are my slides. I have the complaint. Where's the PDFs? Bump, 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 ba-dump, ba-dump, bump. Oh, my slides. Remember, okay, don't forget, these guys were knowingly lying, okay? They knew. It doesn't find it. God damn it. Carlson. He was saying in text messages to friends, Sidney Powell is lying, by the way. I caught her. It's insane. Bingo. Happy to explain, but I never want to lower ourselves if we can help it. A redacted Venezuelan affidavit. It's ludicrous. This is Tucker Carlson to unknown. I don't know who the friend is here, but this is nuts. I just heard Powell claim she's representing herself. Tucker Carlson talking about her nutcase. Isn't this the emperor's new clothes idiom in real life? Talking about Mike Lindell, the MyPillows guy who's f***ing insane. All of the people who worked at Fox News all knew that this was bullshit, and they all helped to propagate this lie that led to the insurrection on January 6th, that Donald Trump still believes in today, that most Republicans probably still believe today, that the Dominion lawsuit was bullshit, that Dominion machines were rigging the election. And now this guy does propaganda for Russia. Now this guy says that we lie about World War II. Now this guy says, did he say he had Ian Carroll on to do a bunch of Nazi historical revisionism? I think, I don't know if this is Ian or if this was Tucker Carlson. Did he say that Churchill chose the wrong side? No, there's no way that Tucker Carlson said that. It must have been Ian Carroll or someone else. There's no way that Tucker said that. But they do this thing where, like, he might have been the real villain. Yeah. And now this guy is in the White House sipping tea in between his trips to grocery stores in St. Petersburg and Moscow, talking about how great Russia is. Now he's talking to the American people like he's part of the administration again.
I had, you know, Tucker, I think you know this, and some of you know this because I wrote about it on X.com, but when X.com was Twitter, I did an interview with the Tucker Carlson Tonight Show on Fox News, and I got a message from a guy named Charlie Kirk that said, you did a great job, I really liked what you said, and let's keep in touch. And that began the start of my friendship with Charlie Kirk. That was the first time I'd ever communicated with Charlie Kirk. So you've known him for a long time. You talked to him about a lot of issues, and I want to talk in part about how to honor Charlie's legacy, because I think that he modeled civil discourse within the right.
Destiny, a huge issue is whether you think Trump won because of MAGA rhetoric slash violence. Over 75% of incumbent governments were removed from office due to COVID, which is insane. The economy is the biggest issue, and the polls are reflecting that. I agree with you, but that's only because we've taken it for granted that all we can do is fight on the political level because of how stable the American political system is, right? If you go to the gym to work out, you're going to be min-maxing you don't have to min-max, but you're going to try to have an effective program. You're going to try to incorporate a good diet, and you're going to try to have an appropriate amount of rest, whether that means sleeping or time between workouts, right? At no point in your lifting are you going to be thinking about doing rehab lifts if your knee gets shattered, unless you've broken your knee, right? You would never think about this. Or how do I lift when I'm also fighting Parkinson's disease? Or how do I lift when I have some obscure health thing, because you take that for granted that you're a healthy person, right? When America is a healthy democracy, we can vote or unvote based on things like the economy. But right now, these guys are attacking the core fundamental parts of our democracy. And maybe we're already past that point, but like, we can't have ordinary conversations about the economy and stuff like that if we are corroding the fundamental aspects of our democracy that allow us to engage in those types of political battles, right? We have to be cognizant of the underlying health of our institutions. Part of those institutions might be freedom of speech, the executive branch not arresting political opponents, and stuff like that. And generally, we just take that for granted because this country was awesome. But if that starts to corrode, we have to correct that. That's so important.
That there were big disagreements on all these issues, but he thought we were all on the same team and we could debate this stuff, but actually have a drink at the end of the day and recognize that we were all trying to accomplish fundamentally the good of the country. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Before I get there.
Seems like all the violence on our side is coming from far leftists, who you always argue aren't on our side at all, illiberal, etc. Why not distance yourself from the violence slash painted as far leftist? You can, but that doesn't matter that much. When we paint them as far left, we should do that for us to build a better movement for us. That's not to help them. And I'm certainly not going to attack the far left when they're the ones right now that are encouraging the violence. Why would I do that? They're trying to rope us all together anyway, and they don't give a fuck if we separate ourselves from the far left. They're going to still make the same accusations. When Obama, I understand some of you, I don't mean to be derogatory towards age. I understand some of you guys might be younger in your mid early 20s, but when Obama was president, I'm not exaggerating when I say that Obama was constantly cast aside as a socialist and a communist. This is the Communist Party, the Socialist Party. Rush Limbaugh said it all the time. California is what he would call California. They would talk about this stuff all the time. The Michael Savage called them the Democrats or the Demon Cats sometimes. These people engage in this rhetoric constantly.
He accepted there were big disagreements.
CNN was called the Commie News Network. I don't remember if that was just my mom that said that or if that was a Rush Limbaugh one too. People said this shit all the time. And Obama was so far from any kind of socialism or communism or whatever, right? Does that mean it's not good to gang up on Hassan for his violent rhetoric right now? I mean, if people want to, I think it's okay. But I have no interest in it right now. Absolutely not. I don't give a fuck about. I think that Hassan is part of the problem, but now we're past his part of the problem. Like, at least on Twitch, Hassan is the part of the problem in that people like XQC, who, and I understand, I might, maybe you guys don't agree on this. I don't think XTC is a bad or immoral person. I do think he, quote unquote, sees himself as a, quote unquote, like a center left guy who now feels like he's far right or whatever. And XTC would be correct if Hassan was the average center left person. But Twitch has allowed that delusion to persist because Twitch has given cover to Hassan by keeping me banned. And then all of the other people that orbit Hassan just repeat his politics, you know, 100% of the time. So the only political polls that you have, your multipolar world on Twitch is between Hassan Piker and his lackeys, his losers, his flunkies, the Denims and the Mike from PAs. And then you have Asmongold, who is just MAGA incarnate. And then like Tectone, I guess, and these people.
It's on all these issues, but he thought we were all on the same team and we could debate this stuff, but actually have a drink at the end of the day and recognize that we were all trying to accomplish fundamentally the good of the country. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Before I get there, just tell me about your buddy, Charlie Kirk. What was he like? What did people who only know him from...
Aren't you exaggerating a bit with the Obama stuff? Back when I used to watch Ben Shapiro, I don't remember him ever saying that Obama was a communist. I'm being honest, I don't remember. Was Ben Shapiro that big of a thing when Obama was in office? I don't remember knowing about or hearing about Ben Shapiro much. Does anybody know? I just don't remember. I don't think I ever listened to Ben Shapiro through Obama's administration. Growing up, I never really heard him on the radio. I don't remember his... I don't even know if he was on TV anywhere. Maybe he was. Maybe the second term. I just don't remember Ben Shapiro being that big in the media. Maybe he was there somewhere, but... Destiny, it seems like people like Hassan are easily weaponized to demonize the entire left wing. There has to be value in removing them, moving that from play, right? Yes, I agree, and we should, and we should keep doing that. But that's a different conversation than the one that we're having right now, okay? I'm not worried. Everything feels so performative. Dude, I'm going to take acting classes over the month, and I'm going to come back and be able to cry for you guys, okay? Because I need to be able to do a better job of this. But I don't feel like Hassan is contributing much to my chances of getting murdered, okay? When I do the TPUSA event we were supposed to do in 3 days that's still going on, and I'll be there, okay? And hopefully it's not the last thing I ever do, but I don't feel like Hassan is contributing much to be getting murdered there. I do feel like the president of the United States is, and all of these guys are, right? That's the difference. Like, the Hassan stuff is bad, and we need to just find he's definitely contributed to the environment that we're in now, but this is the president. It's supposed to be my president as well, right? Remember they would say that? Donald Trump is your president. Sure as doesn't feel like it. Doesn't feel like he's looking out for every American right now.
A lot of issues, and I want to talk in part about how to honor Charlie's legacy, because I think that he modeled civil discourse within the right. He accepted there were big disagreements on all these issues, but he thought we were all on the same team and we could debate this stuff, but actually have a drink at the end of the day and recognize that we were all trying to accomplish fundamentally the good of the country. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Before I get there, just tell me about your buddy Charlie Kirk. What was he like? What did people who only know him from radio or TV not appreciate about what a good guy he was?
That his Christianity was sincere, and his commitment to Jesus was totally sincere. And it, you know, sometimes isn't, especially in public figures who throw out Bible verses they don't understand and stuff like that. In his case, not speaking of him in particular, but in his case, it informed every single part of his life, from his marriage, to the way he treated his children, to the way he treated his staff, to the way he approached disagreement, to the way he thought of other people, which was always primarily as people first. And that was, you know, he was much younger than I am, and I met him when he was a teenager, so he's literally the age of one of my children. So it's kind of hard to take him seriously at first. And over the years that I knew him, you know, more than 10 years, I ended up learning from him. I'm not just saying this because he's passed. I mean that sincerely. And the main thing that I learned from him was how to disagree with people on topics that you take very seriously and that they take very seriously without hating them or without feeling bitterness. I mean, it wasn't, you know, people knew what was going on behind the scenes. You know, there was a lot going on behind the scenes, and it was intense and it was bitter. And, you know, because the divide, particularly in foreign policy questions, is very real in the Republican Party. Neocons versus the realists, or however you want to describe it, he was on the realist side for sure. But he was mad at the people who disagreed with him. He liked them as people. He agreed with them on some things. And he would always say that. You know, I agree. In private, he would say that. And, you know, I was involved in it because people were mad at him for having me at his conferences or for talking to me. And so we had cause to talk about it a lot up until he was assassinated. And I was so struck the whole time. I would say, you know, would use the ugly language I'm famous for in private. And he would never talk like that. He would say, well, you know, I agree with him on this, but obviously I'm on your side on that. And he just never forgot there was a person behind the views. And that inspired me. And God commands that of us. That's a real commandment, in my opinion. And he lived it.
That's exactly right, Tucker. He treated everybody with respect, and because he genuinely loved people and he genuinely wanted their salvation. He wanted them to have a relationship with God. He wanted them to know the truth. He always treated them with respect, maybe especially when he disagreed with them. And I think about this. So you talk about foreign policy. That is one of the big divides on the American right right now. And the thing that Charlie seemed to understand intuitively is that the coalition that made Donald Trump the president of the United States and J.D. Vance the vice president of the United States, it included Tucker Carlson, but also Ben Shapiro.
Exactly
it included people who did disagree vociferously, but agreed on 70 or 80% of issues. And fundamentally, the question Charlie would ask is, if you're a good faith person and you're trying to do right, then you are part of the Big Ten. And I think that's something that we have to try to model together because Charlie's no longer around to do it for us. And one way in particular, I was very touched by this. I actually texted Mark about this because, you know, you very generously have put out some donation link to help support Charlie's family. And think about it. You know, Eric and the...
Why? I never understood this. Like, I imagine they're probably pretty well off financially, no? Was Charlie broke? That's weird to me, but whatever. Like, you're friends with a billionaire, the president of the United States. You did work for him. Why the f*** you guys have a public dono link? I guess we all just do that now? If I get killed, somebody dono link for Nathan, I guess. Jesus.
Kids, most importantly, they're grieving the loss of a dear husband and father. But somebody, us, we're going to have to step in and fill the gap to provide for them in a way that Charlie no longer can't because he was taken down by an assassin's bullet. You know who I saw share that link? Was Mark Levin.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really good...
Isn't it crazy that that more elaborate production effort from members of the White House is put into this compared to anything they would broadcast if Joe Biden passed away with Trump in office? Am I crazy or did Trump skip Carter's funeral? Am I making that up? No, he did. He went to Carter's funeral. Okay, never mind. All right. What am I thinking of? I thought there was a big event or something that Trump skipped. What am I thinking of? Oh, maybe I'm thinking of him. He ordered the flags up early. That might be what I'm thinking of. Jimmy Carter, maybe, hold on, let me check, make sure that's real. Jimmy Carter, flags, half staff. It's not that he refused to lower them. It's that he didn't do the full 30 days or something. Former President Carter died on December 29th. Biden ordered flags be flown at half staff on federal properties for 30 days in keeping with presidential tradition. This happened before. Capitol flags, blah, 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 blah. That's the case in D.C. and several other states. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, a Republican, announced last week that the flags at the Capitol will fly at full staff to celebrate our country coming together behind the inauguration of our 47th president, Donald Trump. They'll be lowered back to half staff the following day, he added. Trump had previously accused Democrats of being giddy about flags being at half staff on his inauguration day, adding that nobody wants to see this. Destiny for his Truth Post. Democrats are all giddy about our magnificent American flag potentially being at half mast during my inauguration. They think it's so great and are so happy about it because, in actuality, they don't love our country. They only think about themselves. Look at what they've done to our once great America over the past 4 years. It's a total mess. In any event, because of the death of President Jimmy Carter, the flag may, for the first time ever during an inauguration of a future president, be at half-mast. Nobody wants to see this. No American could be happy about it. Let's see how it plays out. Make America great again. Oh, so what? Mike Johnson decided to fly at full-mast anyway? He did this flag bullshit when John McCain died too. Under pressure, White House re-lowers flag for McCain. Bowing to pressure, President Donald Trump on Monday ordered American flags at U.S. buildings, lowered to half staff for Senator John McCain until his burial on Sunday. Trump's proclamation came just hours after the White House flag had been returned to full staff, drawing complaints from right and left. Trump, who had traded bitter criticism with McCain since before the election, declared his order a mark of respect.
Good example of how Charlie was able to bring people together from across our movement so long as we were operating in good faith. That was the question. If you were good faith, you're on his team.
That is exactly right. And good faith is the measure. And I have to say, I think now is exactly the wrong time to appropriate the memory of someone and the emotion that comes with that, the really intense emotion that all of us feel and his murder, and use it for your own parochial ends. Like, he stood for this, you know, and I think the reason that Charlie was able to bridge the gap, particularly in foreign policy, is because he had, for example, genuine affection for Israel, which he expressed to me in private many, many times. Like, I love Israel. I don't think we should have another forever war, regime change war against Iran. And I think that made complete sense to me. I sort of agree with that, actually. And so it allowed both sides to talk to him because they felt like this person doesn't hate me. It doesn't need to get existential. It's not about disliking me or some weird bigotry. But I don't think it's helpful for people to jump in, particularly foreign heads of state, to say, this is what, you know, he lived for my cause or whatever. That's disgusting, actually. Don't do that. That turns everybody off. You don't help your own cause by doing that. And it's also literally untrue. So I just hope that we can continue in, I'm not exaggerating, the spirit that he operated in, which is one of love for other people, including people we disagree with, and don't make it, you know, as small bore as that. That doesn't help.
Yeah, so one of the issues, Tucker, and I agree with you, that he would express disagreements with the administration on, there are two that jump out, is one, you know, Charlie was a hardliner on immigration. He wanted us to control our borders as much as possible. Yes. He wanted us to ramp up the deportations. I remember having conversations with Charlie where he would say, why aren't the deportations higher? Why aren't you doing more? And I would talk to him. But it wasn't, hey, I don't understand this or I disagree with you and therefore I'm going to blast you and assume that you're in bad faith. It's, I'm a free citizen. I love you guys. I supported you guys. And I'm going to use my platform to try to accomplish as much good as I possibly can. And I think that made him such an effective operator. And I would talk to Charlie and say, Charlie, well, look, here are the reasons why. And
what news has come out recently that suggests he was not left wing? Genuinely asking, I haven't kept up. Well, the reality is nothing has come out to suggest that he's left wing, except for initially some of the writing on the bullets. But it seems like the writing on the bullets was all just like meme shit from video games. So people were trying to say that like it was an Italian anti-fascist song to his Antifa, but like it was a song from also in Far Cry 6 and then popularized also in some TV show. I don't remember what it's called. And then people were saying that like, this like catch this fascist down, down, up, up, whatever was a anti-fascist thing, but it's from the game like Helldivers 2. He had a bulgy-wulgy comment and he had some other thing. And then now that it's come out that he was a 22-year-old white dude that came from Utah, lived with his family for, it seems like, basically his whole life, dropped out of college after 6 months, went to electric school. People haven't been able to find any like super radical stuff online of his that showed that he's like some left-wing extremist. So now the thing that they're grasping at is that he might have had a roommate, although I don't know how he had the roommate because he only did remote learning, I think, in college for 6 months, that was maybe trans, although I don't think that's confirmed. But basically nothing is showing this guy's being a left-wing radical.
And as you've seen, Tucker, we've ramped up deportation numbers. We have actually, there are a lot of people who are self-deporting because they don't want to be in a country knowing that eventually immigration enforcement will happen. But I think part of that success comes from people like Charlie applying pressure. Pressure as a friend, pressure as somebody who cares deeply about the issue. And that's true also, I know we have about 90 seconds left, but that's true about foreign policy. Like, I remember Charlie calling me and saying, I'm really worried. And this is back in the summer when the Iran strikes were sort of first being contemplated. He said, I'm really worried this is going to become another regime change war in the Middle East that we get trapped in. And I said, Charlie, first of all, like, have some faith here. The President of the United States is not a believer in perpetual war. He knows the mistakes of Iraq and Afghanistan. He doesn't want to repeat them. But Charlie was very clear that he could no more. This can't become a bigger thing. This can't become a broad. You disagree, but also recognizing that so long as you're operating in good faith, we're all part of the team. And that's something I'm going to try to take from Charlie's legacy is not that we're always right, not that we can't take criticism, but that we all should try to work together.
It did worry me because I think your description is perfect. He's one of the very few who took that message and stood.
I'm not updated, but how did Tyler have a trans roommate if he lives with his parents? I have no idea. That hasn't been explained to me at all, so I have no clue. I don't know. Apparently the governor made this statement, but I don't know. None of this has been explained very well. But the reason why I am a little bit reluctant to even believe that's true is because they're so horny to drop these like weird leftist trans like associations, and they don't seem to be backing it up with anything solid. Like, again, if he did remote learning, I don't know how he had a roommate at all. I don't know what the living situation was like. Initially they said it was a girlfriend. I don't know where. Yeah, it's hard. We'll probably know, I guess, in the coming days or weeks. But
buy it. I mean, right to the very end. This cannot get bigger. We don't want another regime change war. But man, some of the people who send money to Turning Point, his donors, were very tough on him. So tough on him that I could feel it. You know, talked to him a lot in the last few months, and he was under enormous pressure. He never bent. He never became bitter.
He kept his integrity to the very end.
To the very end. And I just think it's important to say that because it's true.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tucker. It's good to be with you. Don't go away. We'll be right back with our great Secretary of Health and Human Services, Bobby Kennedy Jr. You are listening to The Charlie Kirk Show.
Who's next?
Wrong or troubling to the fact that a majority of people under the age of 30 here in the States speak Spanish, not English.
What is your point?
Yeah, our schools don't. I reject your premise.
That's not a premise. That's a study that's been done.
You know what a premise is? I don't actually care as much about economic growth because we're one nation under people that don't share our values, that don't falling apart.
All good things. All great things for America.
A plumber, electrician, or a welder, and you have to compete against someone from Nicaragua who's willing to do it. For 10 years, we've had 30 million people come into America. Wages have gone down dramatically.
Service Secretary. Welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show. Joining us now is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., our great Health and Human Services Secretary. Bobby, thank you so much for being here. And one of the things that I always took from Charlie was this idea that we needed to grow the coalition and expand the coalition. There's probably no person in the entire administration who better exemplifies that than you, one of the leading consumers.
I will bet you $50, Destiny, he was in university-affiliated housing, picked remote classes for convenience in the first semester, dropped out, but you keep... Why are you so invested in this? I don't understand what your obsession is with this. I don't know why you keep trying to call me out on this. I don't know the answer. I don't think any proof has been posted. I don't know what your personal, like, investment is in it being one way or the other. I haven't seen any proof posted one way or another. I don't know why you're so obsessed with this.
Advocates, health advocates, these exist in our country, but until a few years ago, more aligned, given your name, you were a scion of one of the great political families on the Democratic side in American history, but now you're one of the most important members of the administration in a Republican administration. Maybe talk, if you would, just a little bit about Charlie's approach to politics and how it ultimately made you one of the most important people in the federal government.
Yeah, well, Charlie was probably the primary architect of my unification with President Trump. I actually announced my endorsement of President Trump at a Turning Point rally in Arizona, which was his idea. And he was, for people who were there, remember it, there was all these kind of fireworks and sparklers on the stage when we shook hands, and that was all Charlie's orchestration. That was his idea, and he insisted on that. But I first met Charlie in July of 2021. I had just written a book about Anthony Fauci, and he had me on his show for this very, very wide-ranging interview in which he really let me talk a lot, which was unusual at that time because I was not allowed to talk on most outlets.
Sure.
And I think both of us approached each other with some trepidation because we came from such different places. By the end of that interview, I felt like I'd met a spiritual soulmate, and our friendship blossomed after that. And even during the campaign when, you know, he was strong supporting President Trump, we always had a communication and outreach. And then after I made the endorsement, I saw him all the time. And he helped me a lot during the transition, as did you, as did Tucker. And helped a lot. Amaryllis, who's my daughter-in-law, he really kind of pushed her a lot to get the job that she has today. So, but, you know, the thing that united us was his total commitment to free speech. And that had been a theme of my campaign. I had been subject to censorship like so many other people during COVID and saw the threat that it was to our country, so that once they understood, they could censor us. And Shelley and I talked about this, that the founders put the freedom of speech in the First Amendment because they knew all the other rights depended on it. If a government can silence its opponents, it has a license for any kind of atrocity. And, you know, as soon as they realized that we were going to put up with that, they went after freedom of assembly, which is the First Amendment, with social distancing regulations. They went after freedom of religion, closing all the churches in this country, which is an extraordinary thing.
They went the first thing. Remember that? You remember when, do you remember when the lockdown started and the government was like, listen up, the first thing to go are the churches, no more religion. We're going to shut down all the churches.
It's extraordinary that we let get away with that. And by the way, they kept the liquor stores open.
Were all these people actually real BFFs, or are they just lying? Like, did these dudes all go to BBC? Yes, all these guys are friends. Yes. All these media guys, all the alternative media guys, all of the people in the cabinet and the president. Yes, all of these guys are very, very, very tightly knit. All of them are. Yes.
Essential businesses. They went after the Fifth Amendment. They shut all of our businesses, 3.5 million businesses, with no due process, no just compensation. They went after the Seventh Amendment right to jury trial. Seventh Amendment says no American should be denied the right of a trial before a jury of his peers. In case their controversy is exceeding $25, there's no pandemic exception. And yet they were able to give these broad categories of industry, these exemptions from any litigation, no matter how much they hurt you. They went after the Fourth Amendment prohibitions against warrantless searches and seizures by making us disclose our medical information. So the entire Constitution came under attack as soon as they realized that they could go after free speech.
So we have 80 seconds left on radio, and then we'll continue streaming for the folks who are...
Destiny, there is no shame in being so closely connected to people outside the government. Rudy Giuliani has never had any official affiliation with the government. He was just Donald Trump's personal lawyer, right? Rudy Giuliani made a phone call before Trump did to Zelensky's office to ask them to open a false investigation into Hunter Biden. Giuliani had no position whatsoever in the government when he made this call. Giuliani had no business making this call. So it is completely normal for Republicans to be involved in this scale of corruption. It is beyond anything we've ever seen before, ever. The full phone call for this exists online. It's not even like a conspiracy, or it was a conspiracy, but it's not like a wacky theory. Like, you can listen to all of this. Like,
is Trump, as his friend and advisor, some of the people he's closest to now were people who opposed him on the world stage. I can't mention who they are, but he has no problem with supporting Hillary. You were a Democrat, or you're more liberal, or you thought she'd be better for the country. Okay. But it's the things where people said he's unstable, he's going to be impeached. That gets kind of personal, and it interferes with a really good relationship. And I don't think it's necessary, because the president comes to it sort of like a white knight, you know, like a... He doesn't have any of these involvements like a lot of these business people and political people have. So I'm telling you, that's my only motive. It is just to get anybody in trouble who doesn't deserve to be in trouble. But it is to make sure we get all... for our country's sake and their country's sake, we get all these facts straight, we fix them, and we put it behind us. After all, it's other people who did this, not us.
Weren't churches not considered essential businesses and were closed early in COVID? Yeah, but it wasn't because they were trying to target churches or target religions, religious things.
And you want to fix it so it doesn't happen in the future. That's all.
Okay, thank you very much. I try to step-by-step answer for this some information. First of all, what is very important and very honest from my side, I told that I'm not just the assistant to the president, I'm close friends of him during a long period of time. I know him personally.
I want to try to get, I think there's three separate times in here where Giuliani says, we understand that you guys don't have anything yet, but could you just announce a public investigation into Hunter Biden? I don't remember when I don't remember when he says this, but I think there are three separate times where he states this in here. Hold on.
President Trump was enormously impressed with that. And I was in politics long enough so that I never got 73%.
Yeah.
Not even close to it.
Yeah, yeah, I know. He was the first. Yeah, he was the first who is congratulated. It was very, very important.
It tells you how much the people want change, right?
Yeah.
So, if he could make some statement at the right time that he supports a fair, honest law enforcement system, and that these investigations go wherever they have to go, going to be run by honest people, that would clear the air really well.
This is an insane... He absolutely was right to be impeached for this shit. It is unbelievable
that they made these phone calls, that they were trying to pressure bullshit, sham investigations being made. In this call, he knows that they don't have any evidence. He knows that there's something. He's like, just announce it publicly. Just say, that's why he's being like vaguish now. Just say that you're going to, you know, you're investigating. You just say publicly that you're making sure that you know that these are going to go to the right place, right? Because he was trying to basically more or less blackmail, you know, the Ukrainian, and then talk him up too, right? Oh no, Trump loves you guys. Like Trump will help you guys. Now Trump's call is even more damning, right? But the fact that Giuliani, and the fact that there's this full phone call like exists, is recorded. No one even cares about this shit. It's just unbelievable. Remember, Giuliani isn't even a member of the government. He has no role in government whatsoever. He's just a private citizen making a phone call.
And I think it would make it possible for me to come and make it possible, I think, for me to talk to the president and see what I can do about making sure that whatever misunderstandings are put aside. And maybe even, I kind of think that...
Like, for a guy known for taking down the mafia, he's literally acting like a mafia boss here, right? Wouldn't it be a shame? Like, you do me a favor, I do you a favor, right? Like, we'd come to a mutual understanding if you could just make sure to take care of this for me.
This could be a good thing for having a much better relationship where we really understand each other. Because the relationship with Poroshenko was, as you might imagine, it started off very, very good. And then lots of problems.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to say, yeah, I absolutely agree that it's you.
Just think about it. We can try to schedule a meeting where we can get together.
Yeah, I'd like to say that, first of all, I can say that obviously it's our principle, and we in so form will be making reforms in our power, that all the facts, all the things which connected for so important for us, relationship.
Okay, we don't have to listen to the rest of this, but like, this is just insane things. Yes, all these people are friends, all these people work together, whether they're in the government, out of the government. Yeah, it's just unhinged.
Shortly after Usha and I left Charlie's family and Charlie's remains in Arizona, I read a story in The Nation magazine about my dear friend, Charlie Kirk. Now, The Nation isn't a fringe blog. It's a well-funded, well-respected magazine whose publishing history goes back to the American Civil War. George Soros' Open Society Foundation funds this magazine, as does the Ford Foundation.
Okay.
And many other wealthy titans of the American progressive movement. The writer accuses Charlie of saying, and I quote, "Black women do not have brain processing power to be taken seriously." But if you go and watch the clip, the very clip she links to, you realize he never said anything like that. He never uttered those words. He made an argument against...
Why the fuck are we attacking, you know, clip chimpers here? What are we even doing right now? What? Okay.
It's affirmative action as a policy. He criticized a specific Supreme Court justice as an individual. He never said anything about black women as a group. He made an argument for judging people of all races and backgrounds by their own individual merits. The very evidence she provides, this hack of a writer, shows that she lied about a dead man. And yet, she wrote it. An esteemed magazine published it. It made it through the editors. And of course, liberal billionaires rewarded that attack. Now, of course, even if Charlie had uttered those words, it wouldn't mean that he deserved his fate. But consider the level of propaganda at work. Charlie was gunned down in broad daylight, and well-funded institutions of the left lied about what he said so as to justify his murder. This is soulless and evil. But I was struck.
Did they say that in the magazine article? This is to justify the murder of Charlie Kirk? Or is he lying about what she said at the same moment he's saying she lied about what she said?
Not just by the dishonesty of the smear, but by the glee over a young husband's and young father's death. Quote, she says, "He was an unrepentant racist, transphobe, homophobe, and misogynist." The Nation wrote, "who often wrapped his bigotry in Bible verses because there was no other way to pretend that it was morally correct. He had children, as do many vile people." That's what they said. He had children, as do many vile people. Now, hours before this smear was published.
Are they going to get to the lie?
My wife.
Can we watch the source footage? Somebody wants to find the magazine article and the footage. We can do it.
And I had the honor of escorting Charlie's body back to his home in Arizona. We took his wife, Erica, we love you, his parents, his sister, and a few of his best friends with us. And as they offloaded Charlie's casket from Air Force Two, I worried that Erica would collapse with grief. Now, I'm a very lucky husband to a very wonderful wife, but I've never been prouder of my wife at that moment as she held Erica in Erica's very darkest hour. And I thought of Erica as I read that disgusting attack on Charlie. He had children, as do many vile people. That's what they said about him. I said the Lord's Prayer, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And I asked Usha what Erica had said to her earlier in the day in a private moment, and I asked Erica's permission to share this. My wife told me, she asked me for advice
Erica asked me for advice on how she should tell her children that their father had been murdered. She asked my wife how to tell her beautiful kids that their father and my dear, very dear friend is no longer with us. And as she was doing it, there were people dancing on that father's grave. Now, I have heard many calls in the last few days for unity and for healing in the wake of Charlie's assassination. You have no idea how desperately I want that, how gratified I was when Democratic friends and even former Senate colleagues reached out to offer their condolences to me. I'm so thankful. And I know there are so many like them all across our great country. I am desperate to wrap my arms around them as we all unite to condemn political violence and the ideas that cause it. Psalm 133 tells us, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious ointment upon the head. Oh, how badly have I craved that precious ointment in recent. It's the only way to honor Charlie, for what was he, if not a man who told the truth in every place, in every environment? Now, the most important truth Charlie told is this, that long ago, a man, begotten, not made, came down from heaven, and by the Holy Spirit, and suffered death, and was made, he told, flowed from that fundamental principle. I really do believe that we can come together in this country. I believe.
Oh, we're going to come together in this country. Oh, is he about to disavow all violence? Is that what's going to happen right now?
We must. But unity, real unity, can be found only after climbing the mountain of truth. And there are
true.
Are difficult truths we must confront in our country.
True.
One truth is that 24% of self-described, quote, very liberals.
Oh.
Believe it is acceptable to be happy about the death of a political opponent, while only 3% of self-described very conservatives agree. 3% is too many, of course.
When was this poll taken? What?
Another truth is that 26% of young liberals believe political violence is sometimes justified, and only 7% of young conservatives say the same. Again, too high a number.
Remember, this is just how you think of the question, because all of these people would say the Second Amendment exists to allow us to fight against a tyrannical government. All of them would say that's justified political violence. This, everybody in the U.S. believes to some extent that violence is okay for against certain political oppressions. But it just depends on how you phrase the question.
In a country of 330 million people, you can, of course, find one person of a given political persuasion justifying this or that or almost anything. But the data is clear. People on the left are much likelier to defend and celebrate.
Notice they never bring up the actual stats, the actual numbers of ideologically motivated killings, because all of those are heavily against conservatives.
Political violence. This is not a both sides problem. If both sides have a problem, one side has a much bigger and malignant problem. And that is the truth we must be told.
There it is. OK, there we go. Good one. Nice.
That problem has terrible consequences. The leader of our party, Donald J. Trump, escaped an assassin's bullet by less than an inch. Our House Majority Leader, Stephen Scalise, came within seconds of death by an assassin himself.
Is he going to name any of the left-wing violence more recently? The Steve Scalise thing is like a decade. Is he going to name anything from the against the left? Let's see. Hold on.
And now, the most influential conservative activist in generations, our friend Charlie, has been murdered. This violence, it doesn't come from nowhere.
What a disgusting subhuman piece of shit.
Now, any political movement, violent or not violent, is a collection of forces. It's like a pyramid that stacks on top, one support on top of the other. That pyramid's got a foundation of donors, of activists, of journalists, now of social media influencers, and of course, of politicians. Not every member of that pyramid would commit a murder. In fact, over 99%, I'm sure, would not. But by celebrating that murder, apologizing for it, and emphasizing not Charlie's innocence, but the fact that he said things some didn't like, even to the point of lying about what he actually said, many of these people are creating an environment where things like this are inevitably going to happen. A couple of months ago, I had landed a fool, but the fact that he said things some didn't like, even to the point of lying about what he actually said, many of these people are creating an environment where things like this are inevitably going to happen. A couple of months ago, I had landed a fundraiser in Southern California, and since, you know, we'd be out there anyways, my wife and I decided to take our kids to Disneyland one weekend. We had fun, and to be clear, most of the guests said very nice things, or they just left us alone. But there was a loud and very cool minority that would shout at my children, who were 8, 5, and 3, whenever they got the opportunity. You should disown your dad, you little shit, one middle-aged woman yelled at my 5-year-old. Tell the Secret Service to protect the Constitution, not your father, screamed another. Are these women violent? Probably not. Are they deranged? Certainly. And while our side of the aisle certainly has its crazies, it is a statistical fact that most of the lunatics in American politics today are proud members of the far left. After Charlie died, one of his friends and one of our senior White House staffers had left-leaning operatives in his neighborhood passing out leaflets telling people what he looked like and where he lived, encouraging neighbors to harass him or, God forbid, to do worse.
Leaflets? Harassment? What about Shapiro's home being firebombed? What actually happened with that? I never actually followed that. Was it actually, or did somebody just like set a tree on fire? I don't actually know about. I didn't follow this one that closely. A burst of the man, they say, intentionally set fire to the governor's residence early Sunday morning while Governor Josh Shapiro and his family were asleep inside. Charged him with attempted murder, terrorism, aggravated arson, and other crimes. He turned himself into police later on Sunday. Investigators say Ballmer told them that he had been harboring hatred towards Shapiro and would have beaten the governor with a hammer if he'd encountered him during the break-in at the Harrisburg residence. What does that sound like? Oh, holy shit! Oh, I thought this was like a fire in the yard. Okay, wait. Damn! Wait, what? And look, thank God Shapiro gave the cuck answer. No offense to him. I mean, I understand, but this type of violence is not okay. This kind of violence is becoming far too common in our society, Shapiro said. And I don't give a damn if it's coming from one particular side or the other, directed at one particular party or another, or one particular person or another. It is not okay, and it has to stop. We have to be better than this. Destiny, it sounded like Vance implied the left was apologizing for the death of Kirk. You should replay what he said. Destiny, honest question, why didn't we follow these attacks on the left more closely? Was it because they were regional, not national, or some other worse reason? Because conservatives set the media agenda. We talk about what conservatives want us to talk about. So that's why we spend most of our time talking about trans people and whatever the fuck else. Investigators say Ballmer accessed the governor's residence grounds by climbing a perimeter fence on the south side of the property. According to a probable cause affidavit written by the Pennsylvania State Police, Ballmer was then seen on surveillance video approaching the piano room on the south side of the residence. He broke a window in the piano room and threw an incendiary device inside, authorities say, before breaking an adjacent window, climbing through it into the residence, and throwing a second incendiary device into the dining room. Police say both rooms suffered significant fire damage. Ballmer was then spotted on surveillance video, kicking open a dining room exit door, climbing over the same fence he used to enter the property and running away. In a subsequent interview, investigators say Ballmer told them he hated Shapiro and was aware that Shapiro and others might be in the house at this time of the attack. When police asked Ballmer what he would have done if he'd encountered Shapiro, he advised he would have beaten him with his hammer, officers said. Oh, so like he brought one with him? Ballmer allegedly told police that he walked for about an hour to the governor's residence, roughly 3 miles from the address listed for him in the affidavit, and that he created the homemade Molotov cocktails used in the attack by pouring gasoline from a lawnmower into empty Heineken beer bottles. In his residence, they found a snap-on jacket, a black bag, and a small sledgehammer the police say were identical to those used by the perpetrator.
This morning, a man is charged in connection with an arson at the Pennsylvania governor's residence while Governor Shapiro and his family slept inside. Pennsylvania State Police said that Shapiro and his family were evacuated around 2 o'clock Sunday after the home was set on fire. No one was injured, but as you can see, the fire caused significant damage to the home.
But we do know that this attack was targeted. We don't know the person's specific motive yet, but we do know a few truths. First, this type of violence is not okay.
This was his own place that got attacked. Look at the difference in candor. Look at the difference in rhetoric and messaging. His own place, right? We don't know much about him yet. Compared to the face, Sam Cocksucker, or whatever the guy is in Utah. Leftist trans bulgy-wulgy ideology. The biggest bulgy-wulgy we've ever seen.
Is not
radicalized by the furriest of tales.
Okay.
Joining me now, CNN's Gene Casares. Wow, this is, you know, Josh Shapiro, they were sleeping.
What year did this happen? This happened like half a year ago. How long ago was this? It was this year, wasn't it? Wait, or we don't know about anything happening in our country right now. This is unhinged shit. This was 6 months ago. The shooting of the lawmakers in Minnesota was like, Minnesota, Melissa was around the same time in June. So 2 months later, this story was gaslit as in Pennsylvania. I was told for months the guy was a socialist because of a few posts on Instagram. The community that pushed it won't even acknowledge that they were wrong at all.
In the home, they had just celebrated Passover, and someone set their home on fire. What can you tell us?
Well, we've got the criminal complaint now, and in fact, we have got a lot of information. First of all, the charges. The top charge is attempted homicide, that this person tried to kill the people inside with these homemade incendiary devices. Next, aggravated arson. We also have burglary of a home, and then we have, as the fifth count, terrorism. Cody Ballmer is the name of the suspect who has been arrested. He actually had a friend of his, a female, call police to tell them he wanted to turn himself in. He turned himself in. He was given his Miranda rights, but he started to talk. Here's what we know. He said that he walked about a mile to get to the house, and that's when he jumped the fence, threw the first incendiary device into a room. Police tell us that was the piano room, and then it took off. Mm. And then he went to the second window he saw and threw a second incendiary device in. That would be the dining room. It took off. He said it was Heineken beer bottles that he had put gasoline in. He jumped through the second window. He was actually in the mansion at that point and then finished his business and left. He was asked by police, did you believe that somebody was going to be asleep in the house at that time? He said, yeah, I knew that was a possibility. That's important. Yeah. State of mind, yeah. That goes to intent to want to kill who.
While it was mourning his dead friend, he and his wife had to worry about the political terrorists drawing a big target, on the home he shares with his young children. Are these people violent? I hope not. But are they guilty of encouraging violence? You damn well better believe it. We can thank God that most Democrats don't share these attitudes, and I do, while acknowledging that something has gone very wrong with a lunatic fringe, a minority, but a growing and powerful minority on the far left. There is no unity with people who scream at children over their parents' politics. There is no unity with someone who lies about what Charlie Kirk said in order to excuse his murder. There is no unity with someone who harasses an innocent family the day after the father of that family lost a dear friend. There is no unity with the people who celebrate Charlie Kirk's assassination. And there is no unity with the people who fund these articles, who pay the salaries of these terrorist sympathizers, who argue that Charlie Kirk, a loving husband and father, deserved a shot to the neck because he spoke words with which they disagree. Did you know that the George Soros Open Society Foundation and the Ford Foundation, the groups who funded that disgusting article justifying Charlie's death, do you know they benefit from generous tax treatment? They are literally subsidized by you and me, the American taxpayer, and how do they reward us? By setting fire to the house built by the American family over 250 years. I'm desperate for our country to be united in condemnation of the actions and the ideas that killed my friend. I want it so badly that I will tell you a difficult truth. We can only have it with people who acknowledge that political violence is unacceptable, and when we work to dismantle the institutions that...
Like, I love that this is my message, right? Because they know that it's true, right? But they lie about the facts, and then they sell this true message to their side. You can't make peace with people that want to kill you, right? You can't do that. You can't... Well, I mean, you can make... Assume it, but they have to want to come together to do it, right? They know that. I don't know why our side doesn't realize this.